This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 89.
It's really important to pull people towards something versus pushing them through it. And here's what was interesting. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was an officer in the infantry in the Marine Corps, and then I was a high school basketball coach and teacher. You could argue in both of those roles from an authority standpoint, generally I was around people who theoretically had to listen to what I said based off of what was on my collar or what my title was. And I found if you have to rely on either one of those, you're in trouble as a leader, right? I thought it was so much more important. And what I learned was to have the ability to inspire people around a vision, a mission, an idea, a plan, convey ideas simply and enthusiastically, and articulate what success would look like with clarity. All of that was way more important than any quote unquote authority that I would bring.
Why do leaders need to earn the right to lead? How can you be more intentional in building your company's culture? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Hey everyone, if you've been listening to the podcast, then you know I'm incredibly passionate about inspiring and developing the next generation of HR leaders. But you may not know, I'm also passionate about speaking to and working with HR organizations to enhance their capabilities. In fact, one of the coolest things that happened since I've launched the podcast is that several HR organizations have asked me to speak about the future of HR and to support their efforts to develop their HR teams. It's been an incredible honor to work with these HR organizations in 2023, and I'm looking to have an even bigger impact in 2024. If you'd like me to speak to your HR organization, or if I can ever be helpful in building the capability of your HR team, please reach out, as I would love to hear from you. My guest this week is Adam Holton. Adam's the Chief People Officer at Amedisys, which is a leading provider of home health, hospice, and hospital at home care. Adam brings over 20 years of human resources leadership experience to his role, including considerable time in the C-suite. Prior to joining Amedisys, Adam served as the Chief Human Resources Officer at NewMotion and CHS, and he's also held HR leadership roles with iconic brands like General Electric, USAA, and Bank One. Besides being a world-class HR leader, Adam's a world-class human being. Adam's a proud veteran, having served in the United States Marine Corps as an infantry officer and deployed to Iraq as a company commander. He is passionate about supporting veterans and their families, and he serves on the board of directors for Sierra Delta, a national organization that connects high-quality service dogs with veterans. He's also the author of a book, Why They Served, that documents and shares the incredible stories of the Marines and sailors he served with in Iraq. However, this is not a traditional book, as Adam has been releasing each chapter online as he finishes writing it. His goal in writing this book is to honor the Marines and sailors he served with, and I highly recommend you read the latest chapter, which honors Keegan Murphy, or better known as Murph. I put a link in the show notes, so you please check it out. Adam spent time as a basketball coach and even taught math earlier in his career, and all of these experiences have really helped to shape him as a person and HR leader. I know you're going to get a lot out of this conversation, and I think you might even be inspired. As Adam and I discuss what being a Marine and basketball coach has taught him about leadership, the four factors that can make or break an organization's culture, how focusing on and reinforcing core behaviors builds a high-performance culture, why he believes that people analytics is the most important skill set for both current and future CHROs, and how generative AI will impact HR leaders in the short and long term. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. As you listen, just drop me a note on LinkedIn. And now, let's dive into my conversation with Adam. Adam, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, JP. And I wanted to say thanks for having me on today. Although, I do have to say that I feel bad for you. I saw a post that earlier this week, you were with Dave Ulrich And now you're ending your week with me. So that seems like a pretty steep decline in how your week's going. But look, in all seriousness, congrats on your podcast that you've built. I love the diversity of the guests that you have on and the way that you bring in their relevant areas of expertise. This is a great learning opportunity for so many people. And I think it's just an awesome way to get people even more excited about the incredible future our function has in front of ourselves.
That's awesome, Adam. I appreciate that. And you were not a step down from Dave Ulrich. He is amazing. Fun to see him, and I had to get a picture. But I'm excited to talk with you today because you have a really fascinating and interesting background. I'm going to call it a non-traditional path to being a CHRO. And let's just go through this. You are a Marine. You spent 8 years in the United States Marine Corps. Thank you for your service. You're also a basketball coach for some time, so we could talk hoops. Probably not in this podcast, but it's one of my favorite sports. And you're also writing a book about your experiences as a Marine, and we can talk about that a little bit more as well. So the first question I wanted to go into is just, gosh, as a Marine, a basketball coach, what have you learned about leadership and just being a leader?
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, I had the honor to be able to be in the Marine Corps for several years and to follow my passion in coaching basketball. Both of those are two things that are very important to me. And I always talk about my career in sort of three phases. One is being in the Marine Corps, two in being a basketball coach, and then three in sort of my corporate career. So to your question, I would say there are three things that I learned most in the Marine Corps and coaching basketball. Number one is the importance of being consistently great in the fundamentals. I have a couple of examples I'll sort of highlight to make the point. One, I'll start with my time in the Marine Corps. So in 1995, I had the opportunity to deploy overseas as part of the Marine Corps. On my ship, we had a detachment of Navy SEALs. Now, look, there may be some people who will disagree with what I'm about to say. The Navy SEALs are the very best in what they do. There are no better in what they do. And the question is, why? I'd seen the movies, I had sort of given into the lore, all this sort of great stuff about Navy SEALs. And here's what I found out about them. What makes them great is they are great at the fundamentals. So when we were on ship together, they would do physical training for 2 hours every day. And it was body weight exercises. It were things that you and I, we could go out and do for 5 minutes. They did it for 2 hours every day. They shot weapons off of the back of the ship every single day. They would create these little close quarter battles scenarios, create these simple sort of shooting ranges, and they shot every day. So what this meant was when friction was high, when they were in the middle of things, they just fell back on the level of their training. They were really good at that. The second thing I will highlight around that and the fundamentals is my time in basketball. It really showed me that it's the best teams are really good at the small things. My team in college basketball is University of North Carolina. Their best player ever, and I would argue the best player ever to play, is Michael Jordan. People are amazed at his talent and his willpower and his competitiveness. All that's true. What makes Michael Jordan really good is how much he focuses on the fundamentals. So I would say that is the first thing that I learned from both of them. The second is, I think that it's really important, and this is about authority, the idea of authority. It's really important to pull people towards something versus pushing them through it. And here's what was interesting. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was an officer in the infantry in the Marine Corps, and then I was a high school basketball coach and teacher. You could argue in both of those roles from an authority standpoint, generally I was around people who theoretically had to listen to what I said based off of what was on my collar or what my title was. And I found if you have to rely on either one of those, you're in trouble as a leader, right? I thought it was so much more important. And what I learned was to have the ability to inspire people around a vision, a mission, an idea, a plan, convey ideas simply and enthusiastically, and articulate what success would look like with clarity. All of that was way more important than any quote unquote authority that I would bring. Matter of fact, I would say that's what created authority in what we can all do. And then the third thing that I learned, I would say, is the importance of a leader's response. Some people refer to a JP as, you've heard, the shadow of the leader and all of that. I buy into that. But to be very precise, I'm using the word response, not reaction. A response is intentional. Reactions are way more open to randomness. Two examples that I will give fairly quickly on this is, one, when I was a basketball coach, I coached at the high school level. When I joined corporate America, I then coached my daughter from second grade all the way through eighth grade. We were very lucky to work with a group of girls who were very competitive, high-level basketball players, even at a very young age. And as weird as it sounds, in the state of Wisconsin, starting in the fifth grade, there was a state tournament. And they would crown a state champion. And in fifth grade and in sixth grade, we were lucky enough to win the Wisconsin State Championship. But one of the things that we spent a lot of time really focusing on with our girls is that the scoreboard was not our scoreboard. Our scoreboard was, what kind of teammates would they be to each other? How did they treat their siblings? How did they treat their parents? How did they prepare? How did they compete on every play? The scoreboard was a poor judge of all of that. And I remember in seventh grade, we lost our first game ever in the state tournament. So we had won 14 straight games prior to that. We came in third place in seventh grade. And it was a huge test for, would we now walk the walk? And I remember how our coaches responded to that and the impact that had on the girls, because they now understood we were serious about what we were saying. And then the last example that I will give, and this is an even more maybe serious example, when I had the honor to take a infantry company over to Iraq back in 2004, 2005, referred to it a little bit earlier, we had five of our guys who were killed in two different events. The first event was an IED attack on November 8th of 2004. Three of our guys were killed instantly in this attack. Another one never regained consciousness and died about 9 months later. When this happened, I was in our command post in our company forward operating base in a little town called Lutafia, call it 30 miles south of Baghdad. We heard the boom, but it wasn't unnormal to hear that across our area of operations all the time. And then the call came in on the radio, and I was on the radio when I heard acronyms: KIA, killed in action, WIA, wounded in action. And when that came in, I remember that there were three things that needed to happen. One, I needed to launch the quick reaction force to help our guys secure what was going on at that site. Two, I had to call a casualty evac to make sure that all of our wounded guys would get taken to a higher level of medical care as quickly as possible. But three, the command post was filling up with all of our guys who are not on patrol at that moment. So there were like 50 people jammed into a very small space. And I remember thinking, when I turn around and face them, my actions and my words are going to carry incredible weight for what happens next. And I've never forgotten about that situation and just this idea that your response to things really matters.
Wow, Adam, that is an incredible story. Thank you for sharing that. And obviously, thank you for everyone's service, because that is an incredible experience and a lesson in leadership in a very difficult situation, obviously, being in battle and the way you handled that. So I couldn't agree more with what you're talking about. The fundamentals, how you respond, it's just so important. You've had a great career, but I love how you really have learned so much from being a Marine and being a basketball coach. Hey everyone, we'll be right back in a moment after a word from our sponsors. I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Deeper Signals. If you are a fan of the future of HR, then you know that I believe the organization with the best talent wins. So how do you ensure that you are selecting and developing the talent that will help your organization to win? The answer lies in using a scientific, data-driven approach to assessing and developing your talent, and that's where Deeper Signals comes in. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessment platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. Why am I such a big fan of Deeper Signals? Well, first, traditional personality assessments are often unscientific, time-consuming, and fail to provide practical and actionable insights. But Deeper Signals is different. It's built on 50 years of psychological research and powered by advanced machine learning. Deeper Signals provides HR leaders with insights and tools they need to identify, develop, and retain the best talent in the game. With Deeper Signals, you can accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. You can generate personalized action plans and development journeys that equip leaders, individuals, and teams with the insights needed to improve onboarding, help them grow, and increase their overall performance. You can take your selection, onboarding, and development processes to the next level with Deeper Signals. And the best part, Deeper Signals is affordable, user-friendly, and scalable, making it accessible to organizations of all sizes. No wonder over 400,000 people from over 140 countries have completed their assessments, and companies like Caterpillar and S&P Global are loyal customers. But don't just take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for yourself. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's future P-O-D. And take the Core Drivers Assessment for free. It's normally $65 per assessment, but Deeper Signals has agreed to give Future of HR listeners this limited time opportunity to try the assessment risk-free. So what are you waiting for? Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, P-O-D, and complete the 7-minute core drivers assessment. I know you'll be impressed with the results. And with Deeper Signals, you'll have the scientific, data-driven approach you need to select, onboard, and develop the talent that'll help your organization to win today and into the future. The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well, and as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. And you're also working on a book, I think, to really commemorate and talk about some of the stories when you were a Marine. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
You're right. I'm writing a book. It's called Why They Serve. And each chapter features one of the Marines or corpsmen that I served with in my time there. And for me, JP, going through that experience, outside of our brothers who were killed over there, you never reconcile with that. Outside of that, I consider it the most important thing I've ever done in my life. And I was so incredibly honored to be able to do that and to see what our Marines and corpsmen accomplished on a daily basis over there. And when I got back, I just had this view that it was incumbent upon me to tell their story. veteran story gets told all the time. I feel like we live in an environment now where people appreciate other people's service. Very different than obviously sort of 40, 50 years ago within our country. It's very different now, and I'm very appreciative of that. But I wanted to make sure that our guy's story was told, and that became really important to me. It took me many years to get going on it. In only a way that a spouse can sort of get you going, my wife one day told me, you either need to stop talking about this or you need to do it. As a result, I now write this book, but I do it differently. I write it a chapter at a time. I publish it. It's not a traditional published book. Anybody can access it for free. It's a great way to tell the stories of some incredible individuals and incredible unit I had the honor to serve with.
Yeah, I think that's great. And be thankful for our spouses who push us to get things done.
That's right.
And I'll definitely link it to the show notes because I think we want to amplify it and have people find the chapter.
I appreciate that.
Look, it's really good. Now, from that amazing career where I think a lot of our listeners might be like, wow, I thought I was coming for an HR conversation, not a leadership lesson from a Marine and a basketball coach, but also you are a CHRO. And earlier in your career, it sounded like you didn't want to be in HR. Like, how did you change your mind and how did you get into this crazy field called HR?
Yeah, that's right. When I decided to go into the corporate world, my wife and I became pregnant with our first child. And we decided that if we could make it happen, we would love for Jenny to be able to stay at home full time with Ashley and then any subsequent quick kids that we had. I targeted two organizations I wanted to be a part of. IBM, my dad worked there for 25, 30 years and was well known within the Marine Corps as an organization of great accomplishment, great stability, lots of opportunity. And that appealed to me. And I first started with GE Medical Systems in the Milwaukee area, which Milwaukee's home for me. And I had no idea, like many veterans, I had no idea what I wanted to do longer term. I started in their Six Sigma initiative. They were looking for people who had leadership skills and who understood statistics. I was a Marine who was a high school math teacher. So it seemed like a pretty good fit. And I was so lucky, JP, not only in the organization I joined, but in the role I came into, because it allowed me to see what other parts of GE and how this business worked. But to your question and to your point, early on in my time there, I remember somebody asked me, what do you want to do long term? And I said, I don't know, maybe finance. I said, I really don't know, because like lots of veterans, I just didn't have a sense of what would get me going in the corporate world. But I told them, I know what I don't want to do, and that's HR. My paradigm of HR was very much from my time in the military or as a teacher, where HR really is just purely, completely administrative. What I found working at GE, I remember my first HR manager, her name's Jenny Hollering. She's why I got into HR. I watched what she did. She was coaching, she was teaching. She was helping to drive the culture of the organization. She had a seat at the table. She was turning the business strategy into HR action. She was leading change. And I remember thinking, that's not what I thought HR was, but I want to be a part of that.
That's awesome. And I think a lot of people sometimes get into HR that way. But I think from a veteran perspective, you're right. Sometimes you come out of service and you don't know all the options. I think that's why it's so important that organizations focus on veteran hiring and giving those different channels, because veterans are amazing hires every time. I mean, I've seen it work so many times in my life.
I think that's exactly right. And I also, having gone through that experience myself, it gave me a perspective that I've built on throughout my career, that you can have somebody who's really good, but they haven't yet found their passion or what they're really going to be good at. And so finding that and that alignment, and I feel so lucky. I remember the day I went into Jenny's office and I pointed at her and I said, I want to be you. And I'd like to think that I'm strong-willed enough that if her response to that would have been negative, I still would have pushed through. Her response could not have been more affirming. And that belief she showed in me from day one. And the belief that so many, I'm going to use Jenny as an example. I'm not going to try to name a bunch of other people because once I get started, we don't have the time for how many people have helped me throughout my career. But it imbued upon me this idea that when you believe in others, the great things that can come from that. And I've tried my very best, sometimes poorly, sometimes well, to pay forward how much others have believed in me and helped me through my career.
Yeah, I think that's great. And this podcast is part of that. So curious enough, then after GE Healthcare, you led HR functions at CHS, USA, New Motion, and now Amedisys. And I guess, yeah, how have you seen the role of CHRO change over the years? How has your approach changed leading HR?
I think it's changed a lot. But to answer that question fully, let me tell you where don't think it's changed, because I think there are some fundamental components to HR that have been in place for many years that I think need to continue. What has not changed for me is the importance of, let's start with keeping the company safe. That is something we don't talk, I think, enough about. We want to get to everything else, but at our core, we and other functions, what we should do most or best is help to keep the company safe. And that is in many different vectors, obviously. But beyond that, things that I think have stayed the same. Coaching leaders to be better leaders. I think that's the fundamental thing of what people who get into HR should be looking to do. Helping to build the culture an organization wants. Translating business strategy into those HR tactics that ultimately deliver business results. Certainly acquiring and developing talent, leading through change, and being a voice for employees. Those are things that I feel like throughout my career have been fundamental and really important. Now let's talk about what I think has changed. Number one, I would say, I think our function, being able to show an objective and operational impact to what we do. That we're not adjacent to the operations of an organization. We are a part of the organization. I myself have been lucky in many of my stops where that was already in place. But when I talk to my peers and I talk to a lot of people within the industry, within our function, I think that's still evolving for some. I think the pandemic, very few good things came out of the pandemic, but I think the pandemic highlighted the true business importance of our function in a way that we had not seen before for some organization. Number two, I think focusing on a great employee experience is increasing. If you look at the macro data, certainly in the industry I'm in now in healthcare, that shows the idea that demand far outstrips the supply from a labor standpoint. You've got to give your people a really great employee experience. Adjacent to that, acquiring enough talent to make your business goals. It's much harder today, again, at least in the industry that I am in. And then the last one, which I actually think is the revolutionary one. This is the one that I think is more important than any other change we've seen in our function in my time as a CHRO. And that's the idea of using people data to make great decisions and having the storytelling acumen that I feel like needs to come with that as well.
Yeah, that last piece on people analytics is something that I think that I know you're passionate about. We're going to talk a little bit later about in the podcast, but really, really helpful to think about what hasn't changed, right? I love that, Adam. I think it's a great perspective. You've also worked for just some great organizations with strong cultures. I mean, United States Marine Corps is a very strong culture. Being a Marine sets you apart. GE, USAA. What have you learned about what great culture looks like and feels like?
I love talking about culture. It is so important, I believe, to every organization. Before I answer your question, let me define how I think about culture. It's really interesting. I've been in some situations where I've heard people refer to culture and they say, I really don't want to get into all that soft stuff. The first culture I was ever a part of was in the United States Marine Corps. The United States Marine Corps have lots of things to describe it. Soft is never going to be one of them. I never felt like we had a soft culture, but we had a very strong, a very positive, and a very impactful culture. But for me, the idea of what is culture, I also think is important. I describe culture as the feeling that someone will get based off of the collective actions and behaviors that they experience. It's that simple. That's what a culture is. And what it leads to when you look at the aggregate, when you put it all together in a large organization, my experience is I've seen the culture leads to higher sense of belonging, more discretionary effort from your people, better retention, and ultimately what it should be about for all of us, better performance. And so when you have a strong culture, that's what you get out of those. So I might give you few things that I've learned about culture. Number one, it does not happen by accident. Whether they're intentional about it or not, organizations get exactly the culture that they desire. So either they put time into it and hopefully they get the one they want, or they don't put time and effort into it and they make it the culture they don't want, but it's exactly what they deserve based off of what they put into it. Number two, culture matters. It drives tangible results. I already referred to or alluded to some of the things that I see culture driving. But number three, I believe that culture and what I've seen is always evolving. And it's a never-ending journey, not a destination. Matter of fact, I think in one of your previous episodes, I think when you're talking to Sarah Kelly, I think you made exactly that point. And it was, I remember thinking that is so right on in terms of culture should be evolving. One of the finest TED Talks that I've seen around culture was done by Rick Warren, probably 12, 13 years ago, where he talked about relevance and he used his church in California as an example of a business or an organization. And I remember his quote in the middle of it that I think about a lot, where he basically said, if the speed of change outside of your organization is greater than the speed of change inside of your organization, you're on a path to becoming irrelevant. And whether we're talking about relevance, whether we're talking about change, whether we're talking about evolution, I like to say that as an organization, we can stop evolving the moment that our customers in our organization, we talk about patients, the moment your patients stop having expectations, and the moment you no longer have any competitors. When those two things happen, you can stop evolving. That's never gonna. And then I would say the fourth thing that I've learned is that the importance of role modeling. To me, when you don't have good role models of the culture you want, it is the easiest way to demolish a culture. When you have low say-do ratio around the behaviors you're saying you want versus what you actually have.
A lot of wisdom there. Adam, I love that quote as well. We have to continue to evolve and adapt, to your point. And the speed of change has really probably never been faster for all of us. I mean, I think we're all really trying to figure out how do we keep up in this age of AI and everything else that's happening in the world today. I know you love culture, you're passionate about it. You also really believe in this power of reinforcing words in culture and using words very intentionally. Tell us more about this.
I think that words... By the way, I understand the irony of a Marine talking about the precision of words. I'm going to get a lot of text once this podcast comes out. But for me, simplifying culture increases the chances that you're going to get the culture in place that you want. And I think words and reinforcing them in a simple way is a very powerful tool into doing that. If I think about the three different parts of my career, I can give examples on the business side. Every year I pick a word for myself and the team that I'm a part of. This year at Amedisys for myself and for our people team, that word is focus. We talk often about that the future depends on what we do right now. And I pick that word for some very specific reasons. I usually start it with what I think I need most, and then the organization that I'm a part of. When I coached, we always had a word of the year. The last season that I coached, that word was believe. Interestingly enough, that word was my word of the year for the organization I was last year for here at Amedisys. But we used that all the time and broke it down to what are the components and how do we drive that. And then in the Marine Corps, the year that we were over in Iraq, we had a saying where you would see it all the time. It was two words: complacency kills. The very last thing you would see before you left the base was those words. Before you went out on a patrol, was the very last things our guys would say to each other, because we were in an environment where if you got complacent, that's what would happen. And I would tell you, JP, the last thing you would think you would have to do is to remind people of that. But that reminder, almost like a mantra, helps to make it stick and guides behavior. So I'm a really big believer when you're thinking about culture and how do you distill it to a few things that you can reinforce over and over and over.
Really, really insightful, Adam. And when you said believe, I also thought about Ted Lasso momentarily. That was the word he put up in the locker room in the first season. So it's been a while, but I'm watching that with my son right now and trying to see if he can get the message around Ted Lasso.
That was our show last year as a team. And matter of fact, on the other side of the wall here where you can't see is the Ted Lasso poster. To me, the best show that's ever been done on sports leadership, maybe you would say leadership in general, although I am biased towards Band of Brothers.
Another great show. Yeah, Ted Lasso is really, really great. And I know you've given a lot of advice today just for leaders around culture, but what about thinking about transformations and leading culture transformations? You've been a part of a few of those. How should HR leaders be thinking about that?
Yeah, look, let me give maybe four things that I think are important. The first one, actually, on a fairly recent episode, Sean Mayo from the Arizona Cardinals made this point. And I think you start with involving as many people as possible. It's important when you are defining the culture you want for the future, certainly for the CEO of the company, for the C-suite, to be very involved with that. But culture has to come from as many parts of the organization in terms of defining what that future-oriented culture is. It just increases the chances that you'll actually see it in place. Secondly, and there are very few absolutes I operate with, but one is around culture, and it's the idea that you have to express the culture in behavioral terms. If you don't, you're going to miss all the magic, because once you can express it in behavioral terms, now I can select to that, I can develop to that, I can recognize to that, I can promote to that. If I don't, I run the risk of confusing people. The third point is less is more. Every principle, every behavior that you bring into the situation, everyone that you add to it, reduces the chances you're actually going to deliver on the ones that you have had in place. I like to do a few core behaviors or principles that we want to drive. And then the last one is where I think the magic happens, which is once you've identified your culture and behavioral terms, now tie that to every meaningful people process that you have. Start with that in mind. Everything else is secondary to that. When you do that, then I think that you have a much better chance of getting the culture that you desire.
Adam, on the culture values, you're making those real, documenting those, the behaviors. Are you thinking about that in terms of what I call like success profile principles around, hey, you know, this is what we're all about, and these are the behaviors we expect of everybody, right? Because a lot of times you may have competency models. The other alternative is some people say, well, we'll have a leadership competency model. We've got one for manager level. We have one for individual contributors, which I think gets frankly confusing. There's a lot to unpack. And then some organizations say, well, we have our four core values and that's it. So tell us more about how you've been doing that or think about it.
Yeah, look, I think it is, what do you need to do to simplify most? By the way, your friends, Mark Efron and Jim Shanley, I've learned so much from them over the years. They fundamentally shifted how I thought about HR probably 7-8 years ago when I first met them. And it was around the science, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes, but it was also really around simplifying. So you will have organizations that will have a purpose statement, a vision statement, a mission statement, a value statement, leadership principles, leadership behaviors, competencies. And when you ask why, the only reasonable answer is the one never given is because that's why it's always been. To me, whether you call them principles or behaviors, the culture you want, it should be what are those behaviors that are going to get the mission achieved? To me, I'm not sort of a purist around purpose, mission, vision. It's like, what are we trying to accomplish? At the end of the day, what are the behaviors that give you the best chance of making that happen? And that's what you should have. Everything else doesn't really matter until we get those right. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think a lot of companies, we overcomplicate that. And I think by having a smaller set of behaviors that matter for the company, and those can change over time because the context could change. The organization mission can change. Yeah. But I'm with you 100% that that can drive focus and that can drive the behavior change you're looking for from a cultural perspective, especially.
I think that's right. Yes.
Let's talk about people analytics because we wanted to get in there. And I know you are a big believer in people analytics. In fact, you said this is like the most important skill set for future CHROs to have. So tell us more about why you're so passionate about it.
Yep. I think it's the most important for future. I think it's the most important for current CHROs. And to me, it comes down to the idea that all of the answers to create the company you want already exist within your organization. They always have. And people analytics helps us to unlock those at a level of depth and a level of frequency and a level of regularity like we've never had before. We can tell why do employees come to our company? What's important about their experience? Why do they perform in the way that they do? Why do they leave us? And then also, at the end of the day, I think people analytics really helps us to understand what is the right intervention at the right time, every time. Imagine if we always knew that with 100% certainty. We have that ability through people analytics. And so today, the technology does exist for us to go much deeper in an ongoing way to understand that. The way I think about it is that the worst that people analytics is ever going to be in the history of our organizations is today. Said much more positively, it's only going to get better. We have such a great opportunity that is in front of us. And then lastly, what I would say about this is I think it's a really misunderstood skill set. If you think about CHROs, most CHROs, I believe, who are in place today, got to where they are because I think if there was one skill I'd probably point to was being really good executive coaches, right? I view people analytics as an extension to that. Now, it's going to help us to understand what are the questions we should be asking, what are the possibilities and solutions to solving the problems of the questions that we're asking in a much different way. But I think there is a next level of understanding that is underway for sure for all of us in terms of sort of separating the smoke in the mirrors from what can actually drive impact within our business.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is critical for current and future CHROs. I also think we're seeing different types of people analytics leaders coming into market. And I've had more exposure recently to what I would say kind of the next gen people analytics leaders, and they are much more business focused than we've seen before. They're coming with trying to solve business problems, wanting to partner with the CHRO or the business or the HR partners. And they're not saying dashboards are people analytics anymore. We know dashboards is not people analytics. That's just a dashboard, right? What you're talking about is solving problems, identifying, diagnosing, creating hypotheses. And so I think it's also pushing people in analytics to say they've got to step their game up too, because it can't just be the CHRO wanting this data. We've got to have the people who help us can find that data and get that data.
So why do you think that change is happening? Because I agree 100% with you. It used to be simplistically that people analytics was dashboards. Certainly that is a component and should be a component, I think, of any great people analytics framework. But why do you see that change happening? Because it is happening.
I think it's a push and a pull. I think the pull is the more younger generation of people analytics folks are coming up in an era where the data is better. They're more business savvy. Yeah, I think they're just seeing the opportunity to make more of an impact, frankly, from that perspective, especially the IO psychologists who are coming out and understand data that way. It's also, I think, CHROs, to your point, are asking more, expecting more. And then the tools are sort of meeting in the middle and giving them the flex to be able to do that. But yet, we're not all the way there. But I think that's what we really want from progressive CHROs is to say, pull your data analytics leader in and say, help me think about this differently. Go solve a business problem with me and the team.
That makes perfect sense. That makes a lot of good sense.
And we can't talk about people analytics or the future of HR, right, without talking about AI. And you have been learning and experimenting with AI and have some thoughts around how it'll impact HR. So tell us about what you've been doing in this space.
Sure. Look, about 6 months ago, we commissioned a small team here at Amedisys on the people team and our technology team to look at generative AI is where we started to say, how can this help us for the future? And what's really interesting is going into that exercise, I thought that we would come out of that with, here are the three or four vendors and tools and apps in AI that really we're going to transform core processes within HR. And that's where we need to start. I was a little worried because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors that seems to exist within that sort of sub-industry. Certainly 6 months ago, it felt that way. But I said, let's wade in and see what we found. And I came out of that exercise with the team with a very different view. My view is that in the short term, at least for us, where I am at now, in the short term, our biggest opportunity is to increase my entire team's capability around using generative AI. Over time, I think there's great opportunity around sort of core processes in terms of, I look at talent acquisition, 50 to 75% of a TA function is really spent on administrative tasks, low-level assessment. Imagine if they were able to use all that time for true pipelining of talent, getting to know what is most important to the candidate and the candidate experience, and selling our company more. If we did that, if we were able to give them that time, how transformative that would be. I think the biggest opportunity longer term is on learning and development. The idea of, and this is just the teacher in me, and look, I say this once upon a time being the teacher, where I was the gatekeeper of information. Those days are so much gone, right? Teachers should be facilitators of information. There's so much more information now accessible and available than ever has been before. But the idea of giving people truly personalized learning pathways, I believe, are in the reach of having the technology to be able to do that. But here at Amedisys, we spend a lot of time really increasing our acumen. And what I'm finding is we are not mandating anything. We're trying to show people, as you know, a lot of fear exists around Gen AI and AI in general. We're trying to show them that the core elements of Gen AI is not to take your job. It's to help you be better at your job. Now, look, longer term, will there be great opportunities to reshape how our function is set up? Absolutely. I view 5 years from now, our function should be somewhere 40 to 50% different than what we are today. 10 years from now, 75% different. And I really do believe that AI is going to give us, with all the roadblock bumps we will experience with it, give us the opportunity to do that.
It's fantastic, Adam. Really, thank you for sharing your experience. I think a lot of people are just early in that AI journey. And so I think it's going to be very helpful for a lot of folks to hear what you guys have been working on. Last question for you, Adam. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I love the fact that you do this, JP. And I am going to cheat just a little bit on this because there is nobody who knows me who thinks that I can do one word. But I am going to do one word in more than one word. And what I'm going to say is impact. The word I use is impact. It's impact on the business. It's impact on the mission or purpose of our organizations. It's impact on the lives of our employees, and it's impact on the HR teams that we lead and the functions we have the honor to be a part of.
Well, Adam, this has been an impactful episode. Thank you for sharing your experience as a Marine, as a leader, and now an innovator in AI. So we appreciate that. It's been an awesome, awesome conversation.
Thanks so much for having me on, JP. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave us a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with three legends in our field of HR and talent management. This is an episode you will not want to miss, as my guests are Dave Ulrich, Bob Eichinger, and Alan Church. Dave, of course, is known as the father of modern HR. His research in writing and consulting has had an immeasurable impact on our field. And over the course of his career, he has published over 200 articles and book chapters and written over 30 books. And you probably know Bob as the co-founder for CEO of Lominger International. He's authored over 50 books, articles, software products, and other intellectual property around the topic of talent management and succession planning. He is a true expert in talent. And last but definitely not least is Alan Church. Alan's a thought leader and one of the foremost experts in the world on talent management. Recently, Alan has co-founded Mastro Consulting, where he works with Fortune 500 companies to identify, build, and strengthen their talent pipeline. In my conversation with Dave, Bob, and Alan, we discuss why skills-based organizations are an incomplete method of talent management, how to think about and define leadership potential, the reasons why organizations struggle to develop a leadership bench, and much, much more. This is a great conversation and one you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.